This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
G'day and thanks for listening to the Hope Mornings Weekly Podcast. I'm Katrina Rowe. This week we catch up with one of the bright young stars from The Voice, the spunky sparky Jackson Thomas. He even talks about this controversial moment.
Welcome to The Voice.
I'm just so thankful that someone turned around.
No, not just someone, but I turned around.
Exactly.
Let's get one thing clear.
Sorry, Kyle.
And why are we so challenged by the concept of older women dating or marrying younger men? Joanna Hayes from the blog Celibate in the City discusses the implications of labelling women as cradle snatchers. Dr. Justin Colson gives some more tips on raising confident kids. Ben McKechnie reviews the new Angelina Jolie movie, Maleficent. And Scott Jackson from Sky News Sport previews the World Cup. That's all coming up on the Hope Mornings Weekly Podcast. Jackson Thomas from The Voice joins me now. Here's a little bit of his performance during the showdowns. Firstly, Jackson, congratulations on last night going straight through. How did you feel about the showdown against Feli and Brandon?
Yeah, it was tough. Each time we sing, it's like the sort of make or break. So it was tough. They're both really good artists.
How did a man with a voice like yours end up working as a railway electrician?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think like my granddad is an electrician, so is my dad. So I just sort of, I don't know. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I was like, yeah, I'll do this. Yeah.
And he's still doing that job?
No, I don't do it anymore.
Do you still hear from people that you worked with in that role? Have they been supportive of you being on The Voice or giving you a hard time, or what's been their response?
Nah, definitely not hard time. They're just laughing how that I've been said that I'm shy, and they, you know, they just tell me you're not shy and all this sort of stuff.
You do come across, though, even though when you sing, you come across as pretty confident, you do come across as quite shy and quiet. Does singing bring out a sort of different side of your personality?
I think I'm a bit shy with situations that I haven't been in before or people that I don't really know, but once I know the person, I'm a bit of an idiot, really.
So we keep on hearing that you are classically trained. How old were you when you started singing and really learning it as a craft?
Probably about 8. And Dad's first singing lessons, and my sister and I went along.
Okay, and you've been involved in opera or something like that before?
Yeah, when I was about 12, so my voice was pretty different. I was a boy soprano. I was in like Opera Australia, did a show with them.
And yet we heard some of that, didn't we, in the battle that you did with Robbie, where you were singing the falsettos. So maybe that background really helped you out in the end.
Yeah, that's such a tough song because it's in the original key. Yeah, I haven't heard many guys sing that before, so it was pretty hard.
Yeah. So you were really singing a range designed for a woman, weren't you?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And so what's the sort of music that you most like to sing, Jackson, if you're just choosing music just purely for the love of it?
I can't go past. I always listen to, like, Jeff Buckley, City in Colour. There's a guy I listen to called Ben Howard, even Matt Corby as well. I love that sort of stuff.
So can we expect to hear you doing the last goodbye before the show's out?
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, no, I can't say anything.
I know you can't. Awesome. All right, I'm hoping for the last goodbye or Love You Should Have Come Over or one of those classics.
Yeah, that's favourite, Love You Should Have Come Over.
Yeah, that's a fantastic song. When you started out with Kylie, now I have to say, Jackson, you looked a little bit disappointed when you got Kylie as a coach. What was going on with that?
I think that's just the whole way it was put together. I think it was so intense being up on that stage. Like, I wasn't disappointed at all. I was just so happy that, and that's where I copped it as well, because I said, I'm just so happy that someone turned around, like I'm still in the competition.
Yeah.
I wasn't disappointed at all. I just had that faith.
It was just, I think, her reaction. You're probably nervous. It was her reaction going, oh, come on, not just someone,
not
just it's me.
Yeah. Oh. I've got so much from that, but yeah, I didn't mean it to be offensive.
Oh, it's one of the dangers of live television, isn't it? Tell us about working with Ricky Martin. What's he been like?
Yeah, he's great. He genuinely, like, cares. He wants your opinion on everything, not just the song, but he wants to know how you are, like, outside of the show, like, if you're, like, yeah, being healthy, and, like, he's a super guy, and he's probably the most passionate person I've ever met.
I guess what's been difficult or unexpected about being on The Voice? What's been the thing that, I guess, has come as a surprise to you or that you've had to adjust to about it all?
Most difficult, it's probably, like, singing for, you get one shot, I think, is the hardest bit, because I've done heaps of gigs and heaps of shows and stuff like that, and it's not as much pressure as doing like this. You know, you could possibly be going home straight away if you don't do a good job. So I think that's probably the hardest bit.
Right. Yeah. Well, congratulations on going so well last night. We look forward to seeing a lot more of you, Jackson, and hopefully seeing you go right through to the end. Yeah.
Thank you. Hope so too.
All right. That is Jackson Thomas from The Voice. All the best. Have you ever heard of someone being referred to as a cradle snatcher? Chances are it was applied to a woman who was going out with or married to a younger man. Why are we so uncomfortable with the idea of women dating younger men, but we're almost totally accepting of the reverse? Joanna Hayes from the blog Celibate in the City is on the line. Hi, Joanna.
Morning, Katrina.
Now, is it just me, or does there seem to be a little bit of a double standard around this? Like, a guy can go out with a girl 10 years younger and nobody bats an eyelid, but if a girl goes out with a guy even a year or two younger, then she's labelled a cradle snatcher.
There is definitely a double standard, and even when it's just joked about, it does, I think, point to, you know, a wider concept that obviously the guy needs to be older than the girl, and for it to be any other way is something abnormal, so we need to make uncomfortable jokes about it.
Well, my husband is a whole 1 month younger than me, so we're pretty much exactly the same age, except for this 1 month of the year where I'm older than him, and yes. I still get called a cradle snatcher all the time.
Yes, yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, I think mostly we're just joking about it.
But it's a joke.
That we joke about it hints at the idea that we're pretty uncomfortable with women being older than men in that sort of relationship.
Yeah, so why do you think that we find it so challenging if a woman goes out with a younger man?
Well, I think if you look at anthropologists, they say, well, in general, men are looking for procreation and women are looking for financial stability. So men will look for a younger, fertile partner and women will look for an older, financially established and secure partner. And,
okay. Yeah,
they reckon that's the reason it's a norm across a lot of different cultures, which makes sense. You know, we can see that in relationships around us. We can see why that would have built up to be the norm. But I think the other reason that that's the normal standard and therefore we're a bit uncomfortable with it is because we think relationships are all about men pursuing women like they're a frightened deer. And so if a woman has pursued a man, well, something's gone wrong. And so, oh, well, if she's older than him, oh, it's a power imbalance. And that's kind of scary and strange. Like, women don't have sexual desire. Why would they pursue a guy?
Oh, she must be a cougar.
She's a cougar. Yeah, exactly. She's
it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, those words, like cradle snatcher and cougar, they have these really predatory overtones. Like, she must have done that by stealth.
Yeah, she's lured him in. Yeah. So I think we're uncomfortable with the idea of women wanting a sexual relationship. And we are used to the established norm that obviously, women want financial security and men want babies. So, you know, that's the way that marriage is meant to be.
That's right. So on some level, we're still expecting women to kind of be more passive and for men to do the pursuing in a romance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But is that a biblical view of things?
I don't think so. So I think there's a couple of things that the Bible has to say that temper this. And the fact is that, like, even just as we discuss the issue, it's pretty clear that as Christians we just go along with the rest of our culture in assuming that, you know, the guy needs to be older and that it's weird if an older woman dates a younger man. But the two things that the Bible says is that in the New Covenant, marriage isn't just about making babies anymore. In fact, our whole relationship with God and our calling from Him is to make disciples, not babies. So we don't need to focus on the procreation aspect of marriage in the way that we might have used to. And also, marriage isn't about material security either. You know, if you are married, the husband needs to provide for and manage his family. But we don't need to get married in order to seek material security. Material security is not the goal of life with Jesus. So if those are the two reasons that we've mostly accepted older man, younger woman as the norm, procreation and material security, those are two things that Jesus tells us not to worry about, that we're to be fruitful spiritually and that we're to seek our security in him. So I think the Bible says, you know what, that's not the goal of marriage. And also, it's quite interesting, the Bible never addresses that the man needs to be older than the wife. Like, there's plenty of directions about marriage, but nothing about the age of the partners involved.
So do you think it's time for us to abandon maybe this sort of unhelpful cradle snatcher joke?
Yes, definitely. And look, the reality is that we need to acknowledge the fact that women have sexual desire as well. I fancy some younger men. Of course I do. But also my celebrity crush is Alan Rickman. Exactly. Their age is not, you know, an important thing. And you know what? Women aren't predators because they also experience sexual desire. Just because if men experience sexual desire, it doesn't mean that they're predators either. So I think we need to just reorient ourselves to Jesus' perspective on marriage, which is that it's a secondary thing to the kingdom of God.
Thank you, Joanna. Great to chat to you as always.
That's a pleasure.
Joanna Hayes talking about cradle snatching. Still to come on the Hope Mornings weekly podcast, a review of the new Angelina Jolie movie, Maleficent, and a preview of the World Cup. Parenting expert Dr. Justin Colson has just published a new ebook called Creating Confident Kids, Scientific Strategies That Build Self-Belief in Our Children. Last week, we discussed things that adults sometimes do that work against our children's confidence. This week, some tips on how to build it up. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Katrina.
Now, in your ebook, you describe these five clever ways to build confidence. And I think a great place to start is with this idea that we need to teach children who they are. How can we practically do that?
Well, researchers have discovered, and this is one of the most remarkable and interesting findings that I've come across in the last few years of my psychological studies and research. Researchers have discovered that children have higher levels of confidence and higher levels of well-being when they have a strong sense of personal identity and a strong sense of family identity. So what some researchers, my particular guy, Marshall Duke from Emory University, he submitted a bunch of kids to a quiz asking them a whole lot of questions about, you know, do you know where your parents met, where they were married, how long they dated for, what do you know about your grandparents and what they did for work and when they were married and how long they've been married for and where they were married. A lot of questions just about what family life might be like for that particular family. And he found that the kids who could answer, yes, I know all the answers to those questions, were much, much, much more likely to have a high level of confidence, high levels of self-esteem, and a high sense of identity. They simply flourished in life. Now, I love this research because it ties in really nicely with what scriptures teach us about our identity. We are sons and daughters of God. And I think that if we can help our children to not only know who they are in terms of our family identity, but go beyond that and teach them who they are in relation to God, then they will be much more likely to be confident. We have a divine heritage. Our sons and daughters have a divine heritage. And I think that one of the best ways to help our kids be confident is help them to truly understand their relationship, not just to us and their grandparents, but to God.
Yeah, I think it's something about having that sense of belonging, isn't it? And where you fit in, that must be partly what's instilling confidence in these kids, just having that strong sense of identity. One other thing you suggest, Justin, that I really like is focusing on the effort that kids put into tasks rather than on outcomes. Why is that helpful?
Well, this is the antidote to the issues around praise. A lot of people get a little bit cross with me when I say, you know, research says don't praise your kids because it undermines their confidence. But what the research also tells us is that we're much better off, instead of telling them how good they are, how smart they are, how athletic or how talented or how gifted they are, those things aren't helpful. What is helpful is focusing on how much effort they're putting into the things that they're doing. My daughter might get 100% on an exam, but if she hasn't tried and everybody else got 100%, we don't really celebrate that. However, she might get 60% on an exam, but we've seen how much effort and how much work has gone into it. And so we'll talk about how hard she has worked. Now, that's not to celebrate mediocrity and ignore success. Instead, it's to put the focus on the things that seem to matter most. And in the long term, the research indicates that our children are much more likely to be confident when they know that effort brings results. Mm. It's all about the effort. So we don't want to praise the result. We want to praise the effort. We want to talk to them about how hard they're working, because that is the lesson that's much more important than whether or not you get 95%.
Yeah, and an unexpected benefit of that is you can also enjoy the process regardless of the outcome too. But speaking of outcomes and competence, is it important for children to be able to have skills and to take pride in those skills?
Absolutely. You know, the scriptures, again, in the Bible, it teaches us that we all have different gifts. Mm-hmm. And I believe that God gives us gifts, and science certainly confirms it, that we all have gifts. And when we use those gifts in our daily lives, and particularly when we use those gifts to help others, we might call them strengths, we might call them talents, whatever you want to call them. When we use our gifts, strengths, or talents to enhance our own lives, when we magnify them, but when we also use them to serve others, we feel a much greater sense of confidence. Now, again, this is not only scriptural, but it's also scientific. We've got the evidence from both places now telling us that when we use our strengths in the right way, we are much more confident, we're much happier, and so are the people around us.
Yeah, and that's great advice. Well, thanks so much for giving us some advice today on how to build confidence in our kids. It sounds like there's quite a bit more in the book as well.
Heaps more. Plenty more.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Justin.
My pleasure.
That's Dr. Justin Colson from happyfamilies.com.au. He's also authored this ebook, Creating Confident Kids, which is available at his website.
Well, well. I shall bestow a gift on the child. Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she will fall into a sleep like death.
Disney has taken a new approach with their latest offering, Maleficent, a retelling of the classic Sleeping Beauty fairy tale from the point of view of the bad witch. Angelina Jolie plays the starring role of Maleficent, and film reviewer Ben McKechnie joins me. Hi, Ben.
Good morning. We're talking about one of the most tongue-twisting titles around, Maleficent. I can't believe they're actually trying to get children to say that word, Maleficent.
I know. Do you know, I've been spell-checking it every single time I write it. It's like,
it usually just auto-corrects as magnificent or something like that.
Yeah, right. Disney movies, often they're quite bright and light, and you could actually be forgiven for forgetting that Grimm Brothers' fairy tales are actually quite dark. Does this take on more of that sort of Grimm Brothers darkness?
It does, in case the trailers and the posters hadn't demonstrated that to parents and caregivers out there. Like, this is definitely the darker side of Sleeping Beauty. And given, as you said, this is from the perspective of the Wicked Witch in the story, Maleficent, it's a lot darker from that angle. I think the later Harry Potter movies, in contrast, I think those had darker content in them than this film, but definitely, especially if you've got young children, there's an M rating on this movie for a reason, and there are darker scenes, content, and ideas that come up in this film.
Is her character, Angelina Jolie's character of Maleficent, is she a sympathetic character?
In one word, yes. Maleficent is much more sympathetic. She does do a lot of the same actions as she does, like she curses Sleeping Beauty, puts her in that transfer 100 years, and you know, she can't come out of it until true love's kiss. All of that does happen in Maleficent, but there are some different, that they do rewrite some of her activities, some of her actions that are almost completely different to what happens in Sleeping Beauty. And I think that's where Maleficent takes some interesting, unusual, and kind of confusing turns.
Okay, I was sort of amused to see that the trailer pitches the film as, you know, now find out the truth. You know, considering it's a film.
That's what we all wanted, wasn't it? The truth about Maleficent. Please tell us.
I mean, it's filled with fairies and fire-breathing dragons. Like,
which must be difficult for parents and caregivers out there. We've had fairy tales around for centuries, and they've often got principles, morals, messages underneath them. They're trying to teach us something usually, and usually about the human condition. But you're right, like, truth is a almost a dangerous word to be throwing out about, how did you describe it, a movie with fairies and dragons in it. It does get a little bit perplexing of like what truth to take from this.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, it's also a movie that just again, judging by the way it's been promoted, it's very heavy on the CGI and on the sort of the action sequences, and sometimes with those things it can actually take away from how much you care about the characters and how much you engage with it. Did you find that you cared about the characters and their world when you're watching this?
Yeah, actually, I did. I cared a lot more than I expected to. I was actually quite surprised at how engaged I was by their retelling in this from Maleficent's point of view of what happened. I actually enjoyed it a lot more at the time, and then coming out of it, thinking about it, I read some more reviews. Reviews have been kind of 50-50 on this. Some have been very positive, others have been a bit shrugging their shoulders or just saying it's not very good. But I read an interesting article on the Christianity Today website, and a reviewer kind of pointing out that where this film, kind of what it's really basing itself on, is talking about the battle between good and evil. That's really what's going on in here. And why Maleficent does a lot of what she does is, as the movie would suggest, is because a lot of bad things were done to her, she reacts in kind. So people do bad things to her, she returns with even worse things towards them. So by the time you get to the end of the moral of the story, it's a bit confusing to work out whether the movie is telling us that in herself she's doing bad things, or it's just because of the environment that she was in.
And it's almost like creating a bit of a justification or devoiding her of responsibility for her actions, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very true. And like, I think it does reach that point, which leaves you walking out kind of scratching your head a little bit about, and then going back to what you said about truth, what's the truth in this for humans? And I think, based on the surface reading of Maleficent, you'd have to say what the movie's arguing for is that it's really because there are bad things around us in the world that we do bad things. But I think you'd have to argue, based on, you know, living in the real world, that's not true. Like, that's, as in, people, bad things happen to people all the time, but they don't always react badly. They don't always react in kind. And Maleficent would suggest that, and you're right, justification is a good word for it. And the things that happen to her, you do feel sympathy for her and you can understand her reaction. But particularly thinking about this from a Christian point of view, and you just think of Jesus' words like love your enemies, for example, Maleficent doesn't really preach that until towards the end, and it's got a slightly different twist on it. So that's where some of my confusion comes about what truth to really take out of Maleficent.
Okay. Well, finally, it sounds like it's not a movie for kids. Who would you recommend it to?
But that is a really good question, Katrina. I think they're actually trying to hit an audience more like Twilight or Hunger Games. I think they're going for like later teens, particularly female. But I still struggle to answer exactly who this is for. But I think it's somewhere in that bracket, females, late teens. But whether they can get into this character or not, I'm not entirely sure. The film is good, but does leave you a little bit confused.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Good to chat. That's film reviewer Ben McCacken talking about Maleficent, starring Angelina Jolie. All the World Cup action got underway this morning in Brazil, with the first game between Brazil and Croatia taking place earlier this morning. To keep us updated, I'm joined by Scott Jackson from Sky News Sport. What an exciting morning, Scott.
It was incredible, Katrina. What a game to kick off the tournament. Brazil technically scored the first goal, but unfortunately for them, it was an own goal in Croatia. Against all odds, they were the fierce underdogs, but they went 1-0 up through the boot of Marcelo, who plays for Real Madrid and, of course, Brazil as well. Turned the ball into his own net and would have had quite a few, well, all the Brazilians on the edge of their seat. But, 22-year-old Neymar, their star striker, Brazil's star man, stepped up and scored a double. He scored or equalised by halftime, so 1-1 at the break. And then they were awarded a controversial penalty just after the break. So that was something that everyone's talking about at the moment. But like it or not, the referee gave a penalty and Neymar stepped up again. 22-year-old, I mean, with the weight of his country on his shoulders, he ran up a little bit nervously, stuttered in his run-up and slotted the goal away and put them 2-1 up. And then Croatia, again, there was a little bit more controversy to come. They looked like they'd actually scored an equaliser, but the referee ruled that there was a foul on the goalkeeper. Obviously, ask any Croatian and they'll say it wasn't a foul, but the ref said it was. And then, look, Brazil scored a late goal at the end. So 3-1, the final score, but yeah, it was a fantastic game to kick off the tournament.
It's not the World Cup without controversy. Now, look, tomorrow, I'm excited about the fact that this game is on such a friendly time, 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Brilliant. Are the Socceroos in good shape ahead of their game against Chile tomorrow?
Look, they're in the best shape they can be. Obviously, there's no late injury concerns or anything. So, and it is the World Cup. Obviously, everyone's going to be performing the best they can. And we know the Aussie spirit. We're not expected to do anything, but we have often been the underdogs when it comes to the world game of football, so I'm sure they'll do the country proud. And look, no one's giving us a chance. Even Marinko or Matosevic, the Australian who beat Joe Wilfried Tsonga in the tennis competition this morning, actually said he doesn't give the Socceroos any chance. He said that after his match, so that wasn't very nice. But look, I mean, with their backs to the wall and no one backing them, hopefully they can cause an upset. You know, I'll actually be happy if they can score a goal.
It just seems like we've been pitted against the most extremely proficient, high-ranking teams. Is that just the luck of the draw? How did it end up that we're, you know, going against Spain and the Netherlands and Chile?
Yeah, look, well, when you're not a seeded country, obviously all the top teams are sort of split up, and then the rest of the group sort of gets split up amongst all the other groups. So Australia was always going to be dealt a hard draw, but this was actually even tougher than it could have been. But look, it doesn't matter. The World Cup is all the best countries in the world, and you have to play the best countries in the world. So it's just an achievement to get there. And I think Australia, as I said, will do our country proud. But yeah, Chile are no easy beat here. They're ranked about 15th in the world, so it'll be tough, but we'll see how we go.
Well, all I can say, Scott, is I'm hoping for rain tomorrow so that I don't have to go to netball at 8 o'clock tomorrow and I can stay home and watch the game.
Yeah, that's right. Well, hopefully for your sake it is raining here so you can kick back and watch the Socceroos.
Thanks so much, Scott. Great to catch up with you.
Good on you, Katrina. Thanks.
Yeah, it's Scott Jackson from Sky News Sport talking about the World Cup.